This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Man, I'm doing okay. Yeah, I'm doing okay. Of course, yesterday was Father's Day. Happy Father's Day to you.
Happy Father's Day to you, yeah.
Yeah, on Father's Day, we did what many people go do on Father's Day, and we went to visit my mother.
Oh.
my parents are in the process of moving from a little town in South Alabama. Dad retired. They're working on moving home, and this past weekend was about the only weekend we could get down there to visit mom. She basically, dad has kind of already moved up here. He's, you know, kind of working on their new house and things like that up this way. And mom has been stuck down there in this, lower Alabama area. And, we were like, well, I know it's Father's Day, but we hadn't seen my mom in like months. And I, kind of missing her and wanted to go down there one more time before she moved up here. And so, anyway, we went, took a trip down there and pretty exhausted, man. You know, just after a long road trip, you know, we're not used to these road trips with the baby yet, you know?
Ooh,
and so,
yeah.
So you know how it is. It's kind of difficult. You got the youngling, hollering in the back, and you can't really do a whole lot about it except, get out occasionally and hope that, some crawling around in the grass is a little helpful.
And it never is.
So we're hoping we can catch up on a little sleep and get right back into the pipe world this week as we, truck on through the rest of June. Yeah. So how was your Father's Day, man?
It was good. It was really good. I think I mentioned to you, I got a grill for my birthday. And
yeah, that's right.
One of those kind of blacktop griddle type, like hibachi-esque type of grill. And man, I love that thing so much. For Father's Day, I woke up in the morning and cooked up some blueberry pancakes. I did 12 pancakes at the exact same time on that thing.
Nice. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it was delicious. So enjoyed that. And then in the evening, did a steak. And of course, I was gone for most of the day because, we're still doing the remote broadcast at the church. So I woke up, made the blueberry pancakes, ate with the family, and then headed to church, and then came back the afternoon and just kind of relaxed for the rest of the day. So it was a good one, man. I have no reason to complain. It was wonderful.
That's great. Are y'all still doing the remote broadcast and all that at your church?
Oh yeah, man. You know, Houston, there's a lot more cases now than there have been throughout this entire process, dude. It's in fact, I don't want to go too deep into this, but last I heard this morning, the hospital that was designated as an overflow hospital has now started to fill up. And so it's we talk about, we like the show to be kind of a respite from the world, but it's a tough time, man.
It's there. It is for a variety of reasons. Yeah, I know. At our little parish here in Jackson, we have started services again, but they've handled it pretty well. It's like, every other pew, you have to kind of space yourself out. There's, you have to wear masks and unfortunately there's no singing because apparently singing can kind of, throw particles farther and that kind of thing. And so, it's just a tough time. Yeah. We're trying to navigate all this as, responsibly as we can, but
that's right. You get Mary Beth Luann, who's been just like campaigning for that Christmas solo. And then, every single Sunday, she's just giving it her all. And she's likely to infest the entire church.
You let Mary Lou sit up front, right?
That's right. Yeah,
man. No, well, but it's interesting times. So, I'm glad you had a good Father's Day. Sounds like the pancakes were good.
Yeah, the pancakes are good. And I one thing I was kind of regretful of is I did not get to enjoy my pipe, which is typically something I do on Father's Day. So hopefully I'll be able to later on this week. That's kind of a makeup opportunity. But man, what about you? Did you get any fun gifts or as you said, you were put to work on Father's Day.
Man, I was, but it was really pretty special. My wife commissioned a friend of hers to actually do a little painting. She took a there was a photo my wife really liked of me holding our daughter Charlotte in my living room, or my dining room basically, and she was like, well, I wonder if I can get my friend to turn this into a painting. And she did, and it, I mean, it was really, really special. It's this print of me holding our daughter, and I mean, it's just really, really sweet. So we're very thankful for that. I'll have to find a nice place to put it, but you know, the artist, this the sweet girl who did this, you know, did as much as she could with a very limited subject. but it is funny. She did say she had to tell a couple people as she was painting it, no, this is not the figure of Christ holding a baby.
Wow.
This is my friend's tobacco dealing husband. Yeah.
Yeah. So, right.
Anyway, kind of funny. But
oh, fantastic.
But, yeah, pretty sweet gift. It'll be something we keep for a long time and are very proud of. So anyway,
most definitely. Well, dude, it was good. It sounds like it was a good one all around. Hopefully, folks were able to sit back and either call up their dads, or if you are a dad, be able to put your feet up and keep the flame alive, so to speak, and enjoy a pipe with your father or with your child this last past week. But man, beyond that, we've got some great things going on. Of course, this podcast is made possible by the amazing support of our patrons over at patreon.com/countrysquireradio. If you'd like to learn more about how you can support the podcast and join the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club, that is a place to do it. We would love to have you there. So be sure to check that out. Man, we've got kind of an interesting episode this week. And it's interesting because we're going to do something this week. We're going to talk about some things. And, you know, typically when we talk about products, especially as we talk about products that that may weigh a little heavier on your wallet, so to speak, we tend to do it around the holidays when people are kind of flushed with cash, right? And so Father's Day is not necessarily. I mean, there's a lot of gifts that fly around Father's Day. I don't know that there's that much like cash gifts that you get as Father's Day. Maybe you should get gifts as cash gifts as Father's Day. But
I'm for it. Yeah, there's several things I could use that I'd like to pick out myself. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, this is the time a lot of folks are being, you know, they're being conscientious with their dollars, but at the same time, we do like the finer things from time to time to kind of keep us sane. And so this is going to be a good one, man. We're going to be talking about top shelf tobaccos this week, and really kind of you know, really diving into, you know, whether or not it's going to be worth that purchase, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. We thought we'd, you know, discuss, frankly, expensive tobaccos, you know, and you know, we have to qualify this, right? I mean, yeah, you can go online and purchase, you know, 8-ounce bag of Stonehaven for $200 or whatever, but we're not really talking about that. We're not really talking about collector's edition stuff or, you know, first edition, Dunhill cans that, you know, date from the, you know, 1920s or something like that. We're not really talking about that. We're talking about just expensive tobaccos that are on the market today, and you know, that, you know, you can go purchase pretty readily available if you've got the cash. And you know, why would you spend that much? And what is a tobacco that costs that much? And what's going on there? And then, you know, fundamentally, is it you know, would it be a good purchase? And you know, that kind of thing. So yeah, it's just, you know, we know that secondary market, right? We know nowadays that a tin of Throgmorton Cellar that used to retail for $15, you know, you can now purchase for, you know, $100. We talked about that, I think, even last week, you know, to some extent. And so, you know, and there, you know, are cases of that. You've got, you know, Stonehaven and Penzance and, you know, Peacehaven and Ramsgate and all these other, you know, hard to find esoterica tobaccos that on the secondary market go for, you know, a pretty penny. And you know, so we can argue about if those are worth, you know, the secondary market or not. What we do know is that the MSRP of those products is, you know, no more than, you know, $15 or $20 or maybe for an 8-ounce bag, you know, $36, $38, $40, something of that nature. And people are paying, you know, 5, 6, 7 times that amount for that. But what we're talking about is when you go to When you go to the store, maybe it's the liquor store, or you know, you're shopping for a new car, and you're like, man, I want to really treat myself this time. Like, you know, the last five cars I've purchased have been, you know, whatever, and this time I'm in midlife crisis mode, and I'm going to show out, you know. Or maybe I'm going to the liquor store, and you know, man, I've had a really special week, and I'm going to buy that really expensive bottle of, I don't know, tequila.
Oh yeah, man. Listen, whenever you know, Christmas time comes around, you know, that's kind of, you look back over the course of the year, I always kind of see how Podastery did. And the last couple of years, when Podastery has been doing pretty well, I was like, I'm going to get the expensive stuff for me this year.
You know, you want to see that price tag, and that's kind of part of the experience. And it's like, well, yeah, you know, I've had a good year. I've saved my, you know, money and all that, and want to treat myself. And so, you know, so we're talking about those kind of top shelf things. You walk into the store and you look at the guy, the proprietor, and you say, give me the best you got. And, you know, so we're talking about those kind of tobaccos. You know, historically, forever, there was a tobacco that we're all familiar with, the brand Lane Limited. Mm. Lane, of course, you know, excellent tobaccos. These are historically American made. They've gone through some transition, and, you know, it being merged with Scandinavian Tobacco Group, and, you know, combined with all the Stokeby brands, and, you know, favorites like Orlick and Escudo and all these. You know, Lane, though, historically was a very renowned pipe importer, pipe accessory importer, and pipe tobacco importer. And of course, you know, fundamentally, they manufactured their own pipe tobaccos. Herman G. Lane, of course, you know, a long time tobacconist, and someone that wanted to be associated with the best brands. We think of those Lane era Sheraton pipes that were imported into the United States, that I've got so many of hanging here on my wall, you know, and you know, so associated with the best. And and they had this tobacco for years and years, and we've actually still at the Country Squire have a tobacco jar with this name on it. They had this tobacco for years called Crown Achievement. And this Crown Achievement, it kind of got me thinking about, you know, some of this topic, because it was known as the world's most expensive pipe tobacco. This was a tobacco that, you know, folks would go for quite a while, and they would kind of save their shekels, you know, up until they, you know, could find a good moment to purchase this. Maybe they'd had a good month at work, or you know, it was a birthday or something like that. And so it was a expensive pipe tobacco. We're talking about an English blend, something that, you know, featured Latakia and Orientals. We're talking about an English blend, you know, something that featured, you know, the Latakia and Turkish tobaccos and even some Perique, you know, and, you know, what made this particular tobacco so so expensive? You know, they would say, well, you know, it's got the, you know, the choicest leaf, you know, included in here, not just the hardest to find, but the hardest of the hardest, you know, and it was, you know, processed with delicate care and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, they actually, for a long time, had made this tobacco. It was seriously considered to be one of the world's finest tobaccos. And then over time, as, you know, conditions changed in the pipe world, and, you know, the economics of, you know, growing tobacco changed, and also, you know, geopolitical things, you know, kind of affected the nature of things like Latakia and, you know, Turkish tobaccos and things of that nature. You know, it became harder to create this tobacco. And so it changed over time. The recipe changed. And finally, people just were like, well, you know, this is not the same as it used to be. It's not something that's as delicious or as, you know, as tasty, as refined. And so it actually eventually went out of production. But they brought it back, you know, a few years ago, actually, Lane Limited brought it back. And, you know, it's just funny, because the tobacco known then as the world's most expensive pipe tobacco, you can get on Pipes and Cigars now for $9.50 a tin. So it's one of those things where, man, I don't know, you know, maybe you just let that one go. You know, it's like, well, maybe if it's going to be that kind of, you know, thing, we just, we let that sit back in there in the memories, and don't bring it back. I don't know. But the reviews on the re-release have been decidedly mixed.
Interesting. So, okay.
Yeah, fascinating. So, and you can tell that, you know, with Crown Achievement, Lane was really, you know, going for that again, you know, exquisite, sophisticated tobacco, or, you know, but in the end, there's just so many English blends on the market that feature, you know, a lot of those same flavors that are, you know, and if you can't really introduce anything that's hard to find or hard to get into the mix, then, you know, you wind up with another maybe delicious English blend, but, you know, one that there's so many others of out there. You know, Virginia's mixed with Latakia and, you know, has a nice, you know, woodsy, you know, earthy kind of cedary flavor to it from the Orientals, and you know, it's great, and there's so many like that are out there, so it's hard at some point justify, you know, the harder the larger price point for that. So so that's you know, the kind of historic look at, hey, we're you know, trying to make a very expensive pipe tobacco here, and this is what we've got, and you know, eventually it just kind of gets muddled, and you know, and even in its resurrected variety, you know, just isn't quite up to par of the old. So interesting.
I'm curious, because I mean, like, you look at the branding as it kind of exists now, is that the same as it was when it first came out?
It was, yeah, very similar. And we still, I think I mentioned this or started to mention this a minute ago, we still at the Squire have the large Crown Achievement tobacco jar that, you know, they would give to some of their more premium, you know, sellers, resellers. And, you know, and a matter of fact, when I found it, it actually had some of the original, you know, tobacco still in it. Of course, it was, you know, basically unsmokable. But, you know, it's, you know, has that same kind of marketing. You've almost got that kind of crushed velvet thing going on there, which is fascinating.
Okay, so that was what I was curious about. Is that kind of, you know, wrinkly, velvety, is that actually textured or just printed? Like, could you actually run your finger over and feel it, or is it just really there for, you know, kind of printed?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you, Bo. I think in the re-release it was just printed.
I would imagine.
Although, yeah, I think, you know, boy, if they would have been able to put some texture on that, that's something you might pay a little extra for.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, when it comes down to it, so much of justifying a price point comes to justifying that. You know, even back before, like, you know, lifestyle brands were a buzzword. I mean, the reality is that's something that you've always been selling, which is a lifestyle. And so there's an aspect to the way in which you present your product that if you were going to slap a heavy price point on it, man, it's got to communicate that more than just numbers when you pick it up. And so that when people walk out, they get the sense of like, ooh.
when you pull that particular bottle of whiskey out, you want, you know, heads to turn or whatever.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
It can't just be well engineered. It's got to have some flash factor to it. And that kind of comes to our next stop in our, you know, little small tour of expensive tobaccos. And there's a company, it's a German company. They do a variety of things. They're mostly known for incredibly high-end smoking accessories, things like you know, tobacco pouches and cigar cases and customized lighters and things of that nature. But it's a company named Sillems. Sillems, S-I-L-L-E-M-S. They have been around for quite a while, and it's one of those companies when, you know, you think to yourself, like, that guy, like, he's really into this, and maybe he's got a little more than he knows what to do with, kind of thing.
Okay.
Sillems is the company that literally takes Corona lighters, which already cost, you know, let's say $200 a pop, and they'll take them and then coat them with a hand blended resin and plate them with sterling silver on the top, and then put rhinestones, like jewels in it. I mean, it's like, you know, this
the
is
gold
like
plated,
you know,
iPhone edition type situation, right?
No, it is. Yeah. Like, if you're, you know, if you're a, I don't know, really successful rapper or something, and you also happen to be a pipe smoker, like, you're going to get a Sillems lighter. Like, that's what,
right.
You know what I mean? It's
right.
You want that flash, and that, like, when people pull, you know, you pull it out of your pocket and it's like, is that a ruby?
Yeah. I think that early 2000s era hip hop. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's interesting. Yeah. The I just this past weekend, as part of Father's Day, I failed to mention this at the beginning, but I was doing a Godfather rewatch.
Cool.
Watched the first one and then watched up to the intermission of the second one last night, and we'll catch the second half probably tonight. But, you know, there's that scene in the second, you know, in part two of The Godfather where they're meeting with the, I think it was like the Havana kind of business outreach for the government or whatever it is. And so he to kind of showcase, you know, just the level of success he's at, the telephone company there had given him a gold plated phone. But not, I mean, obviously, you know, this is of the era. So it's the rotary style, but it's completely plated in gold. And they all like pass it around the table. Do you remember this? Have you, you've seen this?
No.
Oh, man. No, it's great. It's just a lot. I mean, as with all the Godfather movies, there's so much is being communicated every single scene. I'm not going to dive into that. But just to say, it's that level of like, hey, look at this gold plated phone the telephone company gave me. Here, look at this lighter that has all the bling and silver and gold and diamonds that you could imagine.
Exactly, and it covered over an already, you know, what a lighter that was already $200, right? Like, just really amazing. So Cillum's kind of, they major in this stuff, right? They're you know, a brand that really you know, they focus on that. The distributor of these things in America, I'll never forget the first time I got their catalog and was looking through some of the prices, and I was like, are these people serious? And they are, and people buy it. and they do make some beautiful products, so I certainly don't want to take away from that. You know, we're picking on price point here, but at the same time, like, you know, they're companies out there that are not ashamed to say they're a luxury brand. And you know, think of Dunhill and Costello. I mean, these are you know, among the best in the world, and so, you know, folks pay a premium for that. But with Cillum's tobaccos, they generally are gonna have an MSRP of around $30 for 100-gram tin, and so we're kind of starting on you know, a little trajectory here with that price point. You know, that 100-gram tin for $30, it's like, man, you know, there must be some real special care that goes into that. And when you see a Cillum's tin, you know that it's you know, something that is trying to set itself apart. This is not a you know, your coin style vacuum sealed little brass round tin. This is a you know, a very substantial square you know, tin, you know, metal tin that's you know, a clasp kind of fixture there with a huge German silver cross there right in the middle. Just very elegant, very beautiful, something you might see in a jewelry store. And they have a lot of different tobaccos. Their most popular is the Cillum's Black. It's a Black Cavendish, Burley, Latakia, and Virginia tobacco. It's a crossover blend. It's a English aromatic. It's one of those where, you know, when you're smoking it, you're like, okay, well, that's an English blend, but it's also sweetened. Somehow it's got some sweetening on top of this as well. And so, you know, it's one of those tobaccos that I think at the price point, because it, you know, is around an MSRP of $30 per tin, you know, a lot of websites, they'll sell it, they'll, you know, closer to the $20 price point, just kind of as a discount. They, you know, folks are like, well, you know, we're making some money on this, so we'll, you know, we'll already, you know, discount it to move, you know, some more product. And so, you know, this is something where I can really see, like, okay, you're wanting a high quality aromatic, something that you know, has some Latakia, so it's got some depth and texture, and you know, so you're gonna, you know, pay a little extra for something that's packaged very beautifully and all this, and I think that's where Cillum's kind of comes into shine. So
okay, now spell Cillum's.
Yeah, Cillem'S.
Okay. Gotcha, because I was just trying to spell that all kinds of different ways. Yeah, man, you're exactly right. It's almost like a little jewel box right there.
Yeah.
Man, that even that cross itself kind of, you almost feel like you'd get like a brooch or something by popping that thing open.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Or, you know, it's like a piece of, it is, it's a, like a jewelry box, you know? And so, and they are so attractive. It's, you know, something that, you could really do something with that packaging, on the, you know, after side of using this particular tobacco. So, you know, is it worth $30? I'd like to know, you know, what other people have to say.
That's a no.
Well, I've never smoked a Cillum's aromatic tobacco. I never have. And so I've never smoked Cillum's Black, and, would be interested to know, you know, what the reviews are out there of Sillam. So it's one of those tobaccos that, you know, at our shop, we just never really had a big market for. And so we've never never carried. But, you know, at the same time, you know, there are folks out there, it rates really well. And, you know, obviously people that know and love tobaccos that smoke them regularly really do enjoy it. And so, you know, I think it'd be good to get, maybe it's up for our next review at some point. So.
That's interesting. You know, I hadn't thought about it from that angle, but of course, you know, you're, you know, the Country Squire is a pipe tobacconist that's in, you know, Jackson, Mississippi. Jackson, of course, is kind of a town, but at the same time, it's actually right outside of Jackson. I mean, like literally, no, you're actually in the city limits of Jackson.
We're in the city. Yeah, we're in the city.
But I mean, there is kind of a, you know, it definitely kind of attracts a rural-esque audience, especially given the, you know, the fact that it is kind of such a hub in central Mississippi for the entire state, I would argue.
Yeah.
With no disrespect to the other pipe tobacconists in Mississippi, of course. But regardless, all that to say, there's a certain kind of price point clientele that you kind of need in order to get some of these more expensive pipe tobaccos. So I kind of wonder what markets do the, you know, would something like Sillam's Black actually sell well in?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I was actually discussing this with our Ashton cigar rep the other day at the Country Squire. We sell a lot of Ashton cigars. We love Ashton cigars, but Ashtons tend to be you know, a little higher price point than what our market kind of you know, sustains more easily. You know, and so you know, I was like, you know, there's just not that there's money in a city like Jackson, and you know, you've got some smaller towns and, you know, a poorer part of the United States. And you know, you're like, well, I mean, you know, there are some folks here that like to splurge, but most of our, you know, cigar smokers are going to live in a little lower price point than an Ashton. And so, you know, the same folks that work at, you know, for the same exact company that have accounts in places like, you know, Chicago and, you know, even places like Nashville and Atlanta and, you know, in Louisville and places like that, they're a little more likely to sell some of these more high-end, you know, tobacco products than they are in a place like Sleepy Jackson. So, you know, next time you're in, you know, a famous pipe shop in a place like Chicago or Houston, Texas or Washington, D.C., you might be a little more likely to see a Sillam's 10 sitting there on the shelf. So, yeah, so this is kind of an interesting, you know, interesting retailer price point kind of thing. Another one I want to talk about, too, is, you know, kind of moving up the scale just a wee bit. Seattle Pipe Club a couple of years ago came out with their Special Reserve Series. Now, what they did, and this is what they say, you know, through the interwebs, that they found, you always wonder, like, how this exactly works, right? They're like, well, we were digging through our warehouse, and we found some extra rare leaf, right? And this leaf was just sitting up there, and we were wondering, like, what could we do with this leaf? And so they offered the leaf to, they offered the leaf to Joe Lankford, the blender of Seattle Pipe Club Blends. Joe, of course, a legendary blender, you know, in the pipe world. And they said, well, rather than coming up with a whole new blend, Joe took these rare tobaccos and substituted them for some of the Orientals in his very popular plum pudding and in Mississippi River. And so these special edition tobaccos are basically the same exact recipe. But, you know, what they're saying is they're using some more high quality ingredients for this and, you know, kind of swapping out some of the things they were using for maybe something a little higher caliber there. And so, you know, you wind up with a tobacco that, you know, has a retail price of about $40 for a 4 ounce can of tobacco. And so, you know, which is significant. We've kind of, you know, when you think, you know, historically on the high end of pipe tobaccos, you're at the, you know, kind of, at least in recent times, you know, MSRP around $20, $25. That's a high end, you know. You know, we've almost doubled that now. So we're here up to the $40 price point. And so, you know, that I think to myself, like, man, and this actually is a tobacco that we sell at the Country Squire. But I think to myself, man, like, what? How much better could the tobacco be in one of the Special Reserve tins than it is in the normal tins? You know, and I don't know. It's something to think about. It's like, man, you know, can people really taste that much of a difference? And And I think folks can. That there obviously is some kind of difference there, which is impressive. But you know, it's amazing. It's like, wow, that's you know, they're taking some of their better stuff. I mean, I guess it's like Glenn Levitt, you know, 18 versus Glenn Levitt 12 on the shelf at your favorite you know, liquor store. You know, it's maybe it's a little extra time, a little more you know, something that's made that tobacco just a little smoother, a little more nuanced and elegant. So, you know, just a more expensive product. So, you know, if you've tried these, I'd be interested to know as well. I have not tried the Special Reserve series from Seattle Pipe Club. So just one more of those that, you know, kind of stands out on that top shelf. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. So you said that you've not tried this yourself personally. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. You know, how do I say this? All right, so this is with no disrespect to the great folks at the Seattle Pipe Club or the amazing blender there, but the branding is putting hear me out now. Is putting just a red bar that says Special Reserve, is that enough to communicate that kind of level of premium nature to it? Not to mention, and I mean, you know, it. Man, I hate this. I hate bad mouthing folks that I enjoy and enjoy their products. But man,
but you're about to.
Well, listen. I look at this. I just at first glance, if I was to like walk past this, if I was a newer pipe smoker or something like that, if I wasn't familiar with the, you know, Seattle Pipe Club or for Plum Pudding, for example, and I just glanced at this without even reading a word, I might think I was looking at like a bait can for like with worms inside. You know, but just that whole like black top and everything. I don't know, man. I can't. I mean, I love the imagery and all that kind of stuff. That's great, dude. You know, with his mustache and everything. Great spot there. But I don't know, man. The can does not, to me, communicate premium enough. I'm gonna get so much hate for this, man. I'm shaking as I'm speaking right now.
Yeah, you are and will and probably should. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, compared to the regular plum put. Anyway, go. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's not a big difference between this $40 can of tobacco, which generally, by the way, you can find for around $32 online. You know, again, the MSRP winds up being discounted so often for many of these tobaccos. But yeah, the Plum Pudding tin that you see in a normal edition of Plum Pudding doesn't look much different from this. And so, you know, you've got a tin here. That you know, is double the price and is essentially the same exact tin. Now there is more tobacco in this particular tin. It does have, it is a 4 ounce tin. So I mean that is a part of the you know, part of the you know, the arithmetic here. But you know, also they're you know, they're saying they're using more you know, exquisite tobaccos in this particular edition. And so you know, I don't know. You know, would you market that a little differently? Well, you know, maybe. But you know, what the folks at, you know, Seattle Pipe Club are obviously doing is, you know, saying, man, the contents of this can are, you know, superior to the other, and it speaks for itself.
It speaks for itself. So, and there's nothing wrong with taking that approach, except for when you're contending with the fact that you've got, you know, if you want to communicate premium, you gotta do that for folks before they even walk, you know, before they have actually even spoken. You know what I mean? Like for my money, and I could be totally wrong. Again, I anticipate and welcome the thoughts and feedback. please just keep them a little bit more gentle and more respectful than, you know, I put into my critique.
Well, I can't wait until, you know, we're going to talk about a couple other tobaccos here, but the you know, one of the tobaccos is heavy on presentation and maybe lacking a little bit.
Yeah, that's we'll, the other pendulum we'll, swing right
we'll,
there. Right?
We'll talk to the other. We'll speak in short order to the other side of the pendulum here. The next one I'd like to talk about is a tobacco that I've actually had in my cellar for quite a long time. I have enjoyed this tobacco and kind of fits and starts and really like it, but it is a premium tobacco. It's one of those that you know, you don't just rush out and buy all the time. Certainly not if you're you know, on a tobacconist salary. But it's Rainer Blend 71. It's long golden flake. And this is the you know, if you've ever seen a can that has the name Rainer, R-E-I-N-E-R, It'll have the number 71 on the side, and then it's a beautiful little paint can. It's a nice kind of warm gold bar color, just very, very pretty. We're talking about, you know, around the $45 price point range here, you know, as far as, you know, the tobacco goes. And it, this is something that I think does, you know, start, you know, certainly along with the you know, Mississippi River and Plum Pudding Special Edition. We're starting here to live up to, you know, some of our price point here. It's a great tobacco. It is expensive, but it's one of those that, like, man, I'm glad I paid that for that. That was good. It's something that is worth trying and busting out on occasion to celebrate something. So the Rainer Blend 71. This is a small little paint can, a white Burley Virginia's and a kiss of Perique. Just very, very, very nice presentation. When you receive something like this, you'll know that you're getting something very, you know, very, very high quality. And when you open the can up, it's actually, these flakes are actually cut into long, thin strips. And so you've got these long strips of tobacco that are actually coiled up and rolled up kind of in this this little paint can. It kind of reminds me, Bo, do you remember that? What was that stuff we had as a kid? Like, was it Fruit by the Foot? Is that what that stuff's called?
Oh, yeah, or, Fruit by the Foot. Now, that was kind of like the long bubblegum type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Bubble tape? I might be thinking of bubble tape.
Or bubble tape, yeah. That too. I mean, both those things kind of go together. It's kind of like that. You know, you open up this can and you see this ribbon that's kind of coiled up like that inside there. And, you know, of course, you know, it's a flake tobacco. And we know that Virginia's and Perique's particularly, you know, really shine after being exposed to a lot of pressure and time. And so, you know, it just really, really does well. Not surprisingly, this tobacco is manufactured by Kohlhaas and Kopp in Germany, and just has a very, very you know, interesting flavor, a nice pepper to it. This is something that you know, your non-aromatic smoker will really enjoy. You know, it is flavored with a little bit of citrus. You kind of get that little orange note in the background, but it's something that, you know, your average Virginia smoker will not shy away from because it's very tasty. So it is one of those right there along with the Seattle Pipe Club tins that, you know, you might pay $35-$40 for a can of this if you can find it, but you know you're getting something very high quality that a lot of thought has gone into. So I think way back in the early days of Country Squire Radio, we actually reviewed this pipe tobacco. I need to go back and see if I can find that episode and try to look at some of that. But yeah, long, long time ago, we reviewed it. Very good tobacco, and you know, something that if you can find will be you know, a kind of a treat, particularly for the Virginia smoker. Okay, so finally, kind of coming to the end of our tour of expensive pipe tobaccos. Now this one takes the cake. And you know, if you are listening to this show and you're like, oh, they're talking about expensive pipe tobaccos, I bet they're going to mention this one. And we haven't mentioned it yet. And you're kind of, you know, familiar with this, then you're probably not going to be surprised by the one that I'm bringing up now. Back in 2015, and Bo, you probably remember discussing this at some point. I think we even talked about it on the air. But back in 2015, the W.O. Larson Company, which is owned by Scandinavian Tobacco Group, produced a tin.
Snap. Okay. Yeah. All right. No. We got to set the stage, man. We got to set the stage even more than that. All right. So before we even talk about this, Indiana Jones, the opening of the sequence, going through all of the various traps and components, you know, making sure you don't step on the thing that blows the darts or the thing where the thing spears come up. You've made it all the way through, and now you are at that central place in the temple with the light shining down. But instead of the golden idol, what you have is what we are about to talk about. That is the level of premium, like, narrative communication, as John David is about to expound upon. I feel like there's some gravity that needs to go into this, and that's the imagery I want you to have in your head as John David discusses with his pipe tobacco.
There is some gravity here. It is pretty amazing when you think about what they've done. And you know, to be honest, like, what we're talking about, what we're diving into, the W.O. Larson 2015 hand-pressed tobacco, this is $1,000 tin of tobacco, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we just jumped from, you know, $25, $30 to $40, $45, and now here we are. You know, and this was designed to be a $1,000 or a 900 euro tobacco, you know, minted from W.O. Larson, which is really interesting. Now, kind of stepping back a minute, W.O. Larson, a lot of their tobaccos are not particularly, you know, well known or heavily smoked in the United States. This is a brand; it's a Danish brand. They're known for making high quality aromatics in the Danish style, and so we're talking about sweet aromatics, but not particularly wet and moist. Just real kind of nicely topped. You know their aromatics, but they're not going to necessarily gunk your pipe up and that type of thing. So they're just known for making very high quality tins, and the tins they make typically come in like these boxes. It's not even a real the tin that we're kind of used to in the U.S. They're more like these little you know, cookie boxes that they would come in. And so every time you see a W.O. Larson tin of tobacco, you're like, oh, that must be a high quality product. And so what does that company that already makes high quality stuff and, you know, kind of prides themselves on having top shelf aromatics, how do they outdo themselves, right? Well, they make a 3.5 ounce tin. They price it for $1,000. What we're calling a tin is not a tin. It's actually a cedar humidor box, which is amazing. And when you open the cedar box, there's three small tobacco bricks that have been gently cut, bound with a ribbon, and then placed inside this little cedar opening that also includes a hydrometer in there, so you can know that your tobacco is at the right humidity. So that's what they've done here. I'm going to read this from Tobacco Reviews. The most intriguing and costly pipe tobacco in the world, W.O. Larson 2015 hand pressed. To make this one-of-a-kind blend, master blender Lasse Berg hand-selected 21 different top-grade tobaccos and crafted a top note that includes the use of gale leaves that were harvested by hand from the Danish moors. The aroma and flavor are unlike anything we've ever tried, but there's somewhat of a familiar old-fashioned note to it that is comforting yet unique. To press this tobacco, Mr. Berg recreated an old hand press to keep things as traditional as possible. The pressed bars are then packed into a specifically designed humidor. Manufacturing was limited. They made 200 of these quote-unquote tins of tobacco and only 40 shipped to the United States. And there are some still out there on the market because, and you know, even to get rid of the ones that they have had left, a lot of them have been marked down to, you know, $300, $400, something like that from their original price point. So,
okay. All right. So that right there, I mean, I know you've got more to say about this, but I kind of want to pull back the curtain a little bit. If that's okay. Yeah. And so John David and I were very privileged to be able to like gain access to like this, like to learn of this product before it became on the market.
Before it debuted. Yeah.
Yeah. Before it debuted. We saw a lot of the marketing material and that sort of thing. And I remember because there was this big question of whether or not like the industry, the consumer base, like could you create or is there a desire rather for that level of premium in the pipe tobacco space? And there were some different thoughts and theories on that. That's to the extent that I will say. I don't want to say name names or, you know, I'm not even, I don't want to necessarily say much more than that beyond the fact that I remember sitting there and thinking to myself, that's fascinating. I don't know, you know, like I don't know if there is or not. I really don't. But my intuition based off of being, you know, a prominent podcaster in this space and someone who, you know, I'm not the industry mind that you are, John David, but I'm not the nerd.
Like, I'm not the industry mind you think I am.
But yeah, anyway, that is not true at all. I'll say this. I'm certainly not the tobacco nerd that you are. Like there's a depth of knowledge that you have that I just kind of enjoy the product. You know what I mean? Like I think I represent personally more the average pipe consumer or pipe tobacco enthusiast than somebody who's a little bit more in the super fan, which is what they were going for. Not necessarily somebody like me that's a little bit more of a casual, you know, pipe smoker, or an active casual pipe smoker, but somebody who is very much that nerd, right? Like that might want something of that premium. But I remember being heavily skeptical when it was first introduced to us.
Yeah.
I just want to put that out there before you keep going.
Well, and you know, so that kind of begs the question, right? So what was their what was the genesis of this? Like, is the goal to you know, find those neurosurgeon you know, pipe smokers that have to have the, you know, Mont Blanc fountain pen and the, you know, Dragon's Head Edition Dunhill and the you know, the, you know, you know, I don't know what, whatever the best of the best of the best is, they've got to have it, you know, and this is their, you know, kind of answer in that in pipe tobacco. So, you know, I don't know. Was it a publicity stunt? Was it something that, you know, is just, you know, like, man, what if we had $1,000 can of tobacco, tin of tobacco, who would buy that? Like, you know what, let's just make it. And let's see. Right?
Let's see what happens. I will say this though. I do not think, I would not qualify this as a publicity stunt. Because I think that a lot of care went into the crafting, not just of the product, but of the narrative of the product, that it seemed like, I always kind of consider a publicity stunt as kind of like an egregiously cheap ploy to, you know, slap some lipstick on a pig. I don't think that's what this is. That, you know, but I just want to make sure I'm clear on that, especially given the fact that I did kind of build up this whole like, but like, no, I would say this, to me, this is not a publicity. I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but I mean, like, you know,
obviously no, it's okay. That's okay. Just, you know, it kind of begs the question though, like what's the goal here? And I think in the end, it kind of talks about, or, you know, we kind of get to the point of what you were, you know, kind of, I guess, alluding to. I'm stumbling over my words as I always do, but can the pipe tobacco market sustain this, right? Like, is there a smoker out there? Are there enough pipe tobacco smokers out there that are gonna say, oh man, you know, I got my bonus check in, or I've had a really good year, and this is the thing I'm gonna treat myself with? And so, you know, I don't know. I think it is telling to say that a lot of these tobaccos are still available on the market. I say a lot, some, and that they have been heavily discounted to, you know, the tune of, you know, maybe $300 a pop kind of thing. So, I don't know. It, you know, is that something the tobacco market can sustain? Maybe it could, maybe at a $300 price point. I'm not sure, but you know, anyway, all that to say, what they've done here is they took a variety of leaves. They say 21 different tobaccos. They flavored them with this gale leaf that is found in Denmark. The gale leaves are used traditionally to flavor things like beer and other food products. It was kind of supplanted in the beer world once hops became more readily used. But the gale leaves, you know, had this interesting flavor that they wanted to impart as, you know, kind of a, you know, to pay tribute to the Danish tradition of you know, pipe tobacco blending and specifically aromatics. And so it has this fascinating flavor to it. The problem with this, and we actually talked about this in an episode not too long ago when we discussed Sam Gaywith limited edition tobacco that came out that was done with fourth generation, kind of a collaboration. But, you know, they put this pipe tobacco in a humidor, right? And there's a fundamental problem with that. It's like, man, it's, you know, they were trying to go over the top with the packaging and it's going to look beautiful and they wanted people to know they're getting something special. But in the end of the day, gosh, pipe tobacco doesn't belong in a humidor.
Right.
You know, pipe tobacco, you know, that cedar, that Spanish cedar that lines these humidors, man, that stuff is thirsty. It's going to fight that tobacco for moisture. And and typically, unless you purchase this tobacco right out of the gate, that is what happened, you know, with this tobacco, is that a lot of times the actual packaging kind of damaged the product in some sense. And so, really interesting. You know, it's like, man, they almost, you know, outdid themselves so much that they, you know, kind of actually hurt the end product. But, I don't know, kind of interesting. The reviews on this were decidedly, mixed to underwhelmed when it came out. And you know, and I think that's why you see some of the products still on the market. But the idea of, you know, high quality was there. Obviously, they worked really hard to produce something that was very, you know, very special. You know, and I think the quality of the tobacco, you know, from the gate was probably very high, particularly if you're a, you know, aromatic smoker and someone that likes to smoke nuanced things. But, you know, in the end, they put a lot of stock in, you know, some of the packaging and things like that. So, you know, if it were me and you just made partner at your law firm and you're looking for something special to treat yourself with in the tobacco world, you know, I don't know if it were between this and the you know, special edition, you know, plum pudding or Mississippi River or maybe Rainer 71, I might pull the trigger on one of those. So
well, there you go.
Anyway, but, you know, so there are a lot of, you know, tobaccos out there that kind of live in this luxury, exquisite atmosphere. You know, in the end, so much of it is about, you know, what you enjoy and what you don't. And I think with a lot of these, the statement is, you know, that the quality is arguably there, but really they're trying to make a statement with the product, with the branding and the, you know, the packaging and presentation and all that kind of stuff. And in the end, you know, tobacco's tobacco, and what's important is that you smoke what you really like and you know, keep trying new things that are of interest to you and you know, and share the wealth. So that's pretty much it.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, no matter how much you're spending for your pipe tobacco, you want to make sure you're getting the most out of it. So be sure to, if you've not done so already, you need to make sure that you have as part of your pipe collection some great quality pipes from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
That's right, man. Missouri Meerschaum Pipes, they make high quality corncob pipes right here in the United States and have been doing it for over 150 years. Today we are talking about the Elf pipe from Missouri Meerschaum. It's one of their Cobbett series pipes and one of the more popular ones. It's got a really nice kind of Dublin-shaped cylindrical bowl. They're a generous bowl with a long churchwarden style black stem, which is just very high quality. A nice nickel band there surrounds the end of the shank cap and just makes for a really classic appearance. So check it out. We encourage you to smoke your Missouri Meerschaum pipes. And man, if you do, tweet us a picture. We'd love to tweet that back out and let the folks at Missouri Meerschaum know we thank them for sponsoring this show.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback this week. Man, this is a big episode this week.
I know, man. We kind of, yeah, we talked a long time.
It's a premium episode, if you will.
It is. You're getting bang for your buck or something like that.
Something like that. Man, this first one, this is actually a note that we got from the folks there at LawDC. You want to take this one?
Hi, John David and Company. Just wanted to drop you a quick note to say thanks for the recognition and the very cool certificates you sent to us here at LawDC Distribution Group. It made everyone's day, and we're working on getting them framed and up in the office. Thanks for all you do. Best regards, and that's from Ted. Ted Swearingen, the Chief Operating Officer at LawDC Enterprises. So to let folks know what this is about, you know, we every year do our Best Of. And the Best Of show, you know, is where, you know, we kind of take nominations from you, the listener, about the best of in the pipe tobacco universe. And then we actually have an award that we designate for folks in a variety of categories. And so, man, the folks at LawDC, of course, they are awesome. They are some of the best in the industry, not just in that they produce awesome products, but also that they support the pipe community. And so we're really, you know, big fans of them and love what they do. LawDC, you know, just if that name doesn't ring a bell to you, one of these names might. SmokingPipes.com, Cornell & Deal, Savinelli, Peterson, so many other, you know, the importer of Caribbean lighters and so many other, you know, premium and high quality products, GLP's tobaccos. And so, you know, last year we had three awards that were actually, you know, won by one of the LawDC affiliated brands. And the best tin tobacco was for Sun Bear, something that Jeremy Reeves created there at Cornell & Deal. Really awesome tobacco flavored with some of his own personal honey. Really, really cool. The Savinelli Regimental won the, you know, best New Pipe, and then Peterson Pipes of Dublin was the pipe manufacturer of the year. And so eventually what we do is we kind of create literal awards for that and send those off to the award winners. And so this was from Ted. They received theirs, and we're in the process of getting those kind of framed up to put up apparently in their office there. So anyway, Ted and all the folks at Laudisi and your several awesome, incredible brands that are some of the best in the industry. We're thankful for you and love what you do, and hope to have many more years of top shelf stuff.
Absolutely, man. Great. Thanks so much for that. And that goes double for me and Co. All right, John.
And Co. That's and right. Co. That's right.
All right, man. We got one. Man, we haven't heard from Mark VV in a while, so I was excited to see this come in. It says, John David, Bo, remember me? It's one of the OG Squires. The one, the only Mark VV. I might be your number one fan. I vacation in my John David costume and hunt for buried McClelland in people's yards. On a serious note, I finally started to catch up on my massive episode backlog as I've been down for the count due to new baby related reasons. But I did listen to the most recent and wanted to offer my feedback and absolute agreeance with John David on what makes a bad pipe a bad pipe. This is an episode we did a few weeks back. He says, mechanics, man, it's so key. I've seen so many people, including myself, buy several $100 pipes from, quote, artisans on Etsy or eBay or Instaface to get real clunkers because they hadn't been carving long enough to master the mechanics. The pipes look gorgeous, but go unsmoked because the experience is far below subpar. This is not to say there aren't some absolutely stellar artisan pipe makers out there, but for your first, get a dang factory Salvinelli or something. On a side note, my wife and I had our second baby daughter back in December. It's a stretch, but the missus and I named her with a pipe smoking related name. Little Lucy was named for none other than my favorite literary character, Lucy Pevensey from the Chronicles of Narnia, which was written by one of my favorite pipe smokers of all time, C.S. Lewis. And again, that is coming from our boy down in New Orleans, Mark VV.
Man, Mark, great to hear from you, man. I think you're dead on. You know, we talked about, the mechanics of pipes making such a big difference, even if the briar is subpar, or even if the, materials aren't quite, what you would like them to be. Man, if the drilling is on and if the, if all the pieces are in the right place and, the diameter of this and that and the draft hole lines up correctly and, all that stuff is just so, so important. So, I think you're dead on, and as an aside, just congrats again on Little Lucy and man, for your sweet family. We love you so much and are very thankful for you and your precious family.
Absolutely, man. And hey, thanks to everybody who are writing in, sending your feedback, tuning in every single week. We love getting this feedback in. If you want to, you can email us, show@countrysquireradio.com. You can, of course, keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at @TheRealBoYork.
I'm at @JohnDavidCole, or you can get us at the shop @_CountrySquire.
Of course, the show's handle is @SquireRadio, but all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Well, man, like I said, it's a premium episode. We went a little bit longer than anticipated here, but that just means even more for next week, man. So, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.